Broadcasting.
Good afternoon. I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue. It's Wednesday, April 7th. Before we start the meeting and before we call the roll, I want to give a special welcome to the members of the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee who are joining us today, especially because of the informational meeting that we're starting out with. Will the committee assistant please call the roll for House Revenue? Oh, and excuse me, before you call the roll, will our guests who are not members of the committee please mute your microphone and turn your camera off? And then when we call on you to speak, camera on and mic on. Okay, we're ready for roll call.
Representative Levy.
Present by video.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh is here by video.
Representative Smith.
Excused.
I see him. I think he's muted.
He's trying to.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry, Chair Nathanson. I'm at the Oregon State Hospital, but I am here by video.
Representative Valderrama.
Representative Valderrama, present by video.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham is present by video.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke, present by video.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Present by video. Thank you. Mr. Alanek, will you please introduce the topic for us? I'm opening an informational meeting.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. The agenda today is all timber tax related. Before the public hearing, the informational meeting we have is a high-level history of forest land and timber taxation. Jamie McGovern from LRO is going to present it. This is a presentation that has been shared with a couple of other committees over the past 5 or 6 months. It's generally the same thing, slight tweaks each time around, but it's intended to give you some context and some history for the bill you're going to hear today, as well as the discussion we expect to occur tomorrow.
Thank you. Ms. McGovern.
Chair Nathanson, Chair Burdick, members of the committees, members of the two revenue committees, Chris stole some of my thunder, but I'm going to have our wonderful staff share the slides and I'll be narrating. And please feel free, Chair Nathanson, it's up to you. I'm happy to take questions along the way or wait as you call on people. So please feel free to use your discretion with that.
Thanks for the invitation. I'll let you know.
Thank you. So, okay. I'm going to start off with mentioning that we'll be talking about property tax and timber tax in Oregon, and we'll be talking about the intersection of those two taxes. And some of you may have seen this before, as Chris mentioned, and we're going to start from a high level and then sort of drill down into the different types of taxes and some of the history that those fall on in Oregon. And I am not looking at my screen, so yes, next slide, please. So in Oregon, we'll first talk about our forest lands and the forest land ownership, and then we'll break apart the taxation into the two major components that we have in Oregon. Next slide, please. So who owns all this land in Oregon and what are we using it for? So we have a lot of land, but we also have some of that land being forest land. Next slide, please. So you can see on this map that Oregon spans a little over 60 million acres, with the West being at the same time more settled and also containing a large amount of forest. And then the East is more sparsely populated and also containing high deserts and in different terrain. So almost one half of Oregon is forest land, and there's a small percentage of Oregon that's water. And the other half of the state is what you might think of as developed or urban and farmland, coastland range, And you can see from the map when looking at the forest how the federal forest lands cover a large part of this state in orange. And we can also see there's a significant amount of forest land ownership by private landowners, and that's in green. And there are small concentrated areas of Native American tribal land, forest lands in purple, so sort of in the northern center part of the state. So that kind of gives us an overview of the forest land ownership in our state. Next slide, please. And so if we think about, now we can envision what that looks like from the air or from a map. Down on the ground, we can break apart those into some useful metrics. And so speaking now only of the 29.7 million forest land acres and not the rest of the state, we can see that between federal, state, and local governments, the government or the people own or manage approximately two-thirds of the forest land in the state. And this is important in part because in general, government property is not taxable. And tribal lands are also not in general taxable. So about two-thirds of the forest land in the state does not generate property tax revenue on the tax roll. The other approximately third owned by private landowners is again split close to two-thirds and then to one-third with large owners owning more. And we'll talk more about that, but the term large and small is largely derived from the tax programs applicable to land ownership and a threshold there being 5,000 acres in Oregon. Next slide, please.
I have a question for you about that, about the ownership and the threshold. For large?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Could you repeat as exactly as you can recall what you just said?
Oh, yeah, Chair Nathanson. The term, exactly as I said. Okay, so, sorry. In large part, the approximately two-thirds of that private forest land is owned by larger owners and one-third is the smaller owners. And when we use the term small and large, they're not explicitly defined, but in the context of this presentation and talking about forest land, the threshold of small to large is 5,000 acres by a single owner.
And it's based on something in statute or in an adopted program or?
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. So in Oregon, we have something called a small tract forest land program. And that forest land program has a different taxation program. And so the taxation treatment is different. And what we also find out is that some of the ownership of those lands tends to be different in the type of lands, whether that's surrounding like closer to urban areas or further out. And that is determined by the class. And so that's, you know, we have some terms for that called highest and best use and designated forest land, which we'll talk about, or I'll talk about those a little bit further down. But that's kind of where the terminology comes from, and also some distinguishing characteristics between smaller and larger owners.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so moving to the next slide, we're getting a little bit deeper into the land ownership. We're not getting a little bit deeper into the land ownership. We're gonna talk about where the trees are harvested. And so you can imagine that you can have private landowners harvesting on government lands, or they can harvest on their own lands. And so this pie chart is talking about where the trees are harvested, regardless of the individuals or companies that are harvesting them. And so this pie chart would have looked very different pre-1990s. where the harvest was on public lands and harvest on private lands was both larger, and it was generally split more equally. Sorry that my phone is ringing in the background. But now, however, as you probably already know, that the majority of timber is harvested on primarily privately owned lands, and in particular on land owned by large owners. Next slide, please. Okay, so this graph here is a long history of the annual harvest in million board feet. We usually talk about 1,000 board feet in terms of harvest, but when we're talking about the entire state, we're looking at either billion board feet or million board feet. And so that you know, 1,000 board feet is the general term for the industry. And so just to give some context, 1,000 board feet, which is that industrial term, would be a tree or a log. So there are some technicalities in measurement for height off the ground, but for perspective, is approximately 30 feet tall and 27 inches in diameter. I've also read that a log truck would have about 5,000 board feet on a log truck. So there's some varying ways you could get a conceptual idea of what a 1,000 board feet is. So you can see that the timber harvest in Oregon grew in general to the 60s and then gradually fell after that. Each of the major recessions and the Great Depression in 2000, the Great Recession in 2009, the early 1980s and 1929 caused reduction in harvest. The downward trend that really began in earnest in the 90s was strongly correlated with environmental concerns that were playing out at the time, for which Oregon was center stage. And in the next slide, I'll talk about where those differences in harvests were. But I'll just note that you know, the dotted line at the end of this graph is forecasted harvest. That's not certain, but the solid lines are historical harvest. Next slide, please. Okay, so this graph is a little more detailed, but also focusing on more recent years. We have where the timber was harvested over these past, you know, approximately 40 years, with the blue being the private land and the other two combining the public lands. So what's happening on privately owned forest lands was different over the years than what was happening on public lands. In earlier years, a lot of the fluctuation that was occurring on public property. And then we had the environmental policies in the 90s. That caused a permanent decrease in timber. That harvest was largely impactful solely on public lands. You can kind of see that the blue area that's shaded has been relatively constant with some of those dips that you see following the economic declines. But then, for instance, in 2009, that dip was somewhat recovered on private lands. And so, you know, we're sort of trekking along at relatively constant rates for the private lands. Next slide, please. Okay, so here we're just giving an idea of, given the amount of harvest that we saw on the last slide, what's been happening to the value of each log that's harvested over the years. So this is a chart of the value of timber harvested as estimated by the Department of Forestry. As you can see, there's a difference between Eastern and Western Oregon. That's largely because of different species of trees and productivity of the land, which may not be surprising. And the values bounce around a bit based on economic conditions and other factors. But for both East and West, there's approximately an uptick of about 4 to 5% per year. I'll just note that this last year might have seen a larger increase given the COVID sort of surge in building, but we don't have some of those numbers yet. But the general increase is about 4 to 5%. So that's talking about one of those logs that's 1,000 board feet. and how much it would be worth. Okay, so those are, next slide, please. Those are all the sort of overlay of the land. And now we'll get a little bit into the taxation. We know what has been being harvested. We know what it's worth. And we're going to look at the two types of taxes that are applied to forest lands, which is property taxes and lands, and then timber taxes and the different types of timber taxes. Next slide, please. So presumably creative people could come up with many different ways to tax timber and timberlands. Historically in Oregon, we have imposed taxes on the harvest, taxes on the land, taxes on the standing timber, and numerous combinations of those. I'm gonna talk a little bit about our history with all those different kinds of taxes and the combinations and where we sit today. Next slide, please. So the goal in this slide is to kind of see the movement through time. And Oregon actually has a lot of history in changing timber taxes, but in going through the legislative history, a lot of the changes are modest. And so kind of noted here some of the larger shifts or changes in timber tax and policy changes. So prior to 1929, both the land and the standing timber were taxed in Oregon. And there was a period where some land was abandoned after all the trees were cut. Oregon changed the approach to tax the timber at the point of harvest instead of the standing timber. This tax was set at 12.5% of the value with a small charge on the land itself. So there was a bit of a shift to taxing the land or the trees at the time of harvest. And we started looking at something called reforestation. And so between 1947 and 1977, there was both a yield tax on value and a harvest tax on the volume, which is the 1,000 board feet or MBF. In the meantime, beginning in the 60s, there was a hybrid system where some trees on the property tax roll were at a reduced rate based on their size. For instance, if they were larger than 12 inches in diameter, and the beginnings of the small tract option was born. And we'll talk a little bit more about that today. Then in the 1970s, the legislature repealed the forest fee and yield tax, which was that treatment in part for reforestation and the hybrid system. And by 1976, the volume of old growth trees on the roll was down to 40% of the 1962 level. And so the new growth wasn't changing very much. So at this time, the legislature created a new set of severance taxes, not based on an old growth system versus a new growth system, but on an east, pardon me. But at an east versus west value, so at 7.5 versus 6% of the value. What was also constructed at this time was a system for receiving those severance tax revenues at the state level and then redistributing them back to the local governments, which they were then funded through tax levies. Oh, some people have heard this called an offset for the local taxing districts. And so then it might not be surprising that when Measure 5 and Measure 50 were passed, there was a question about whether these severance taxes were akin to property taxes. Then the legislature moved forward and abolished the severance tax system and created the privilege tax system, which is the for a tax for the privilege of cutting trees in Oregon. And possibly lead to less of a loss in tax revenue than if the severance taxes were to remain and be subject to the interpretation of Measure 5 measure and moving forward Measure 50. And so where we are today We have property taxes on the land itself. They do not include the standing timber. So standing timber is exempt from property taxes. Property values that are determined by the Department of Revenue and statute based on soil class, and the forest products harvest tax, which is a tax at the time that the timber is cut. And then we have a separate program, which Chair Nathanson, you asked about, the small tract forest land program, which has a split taxing system, which is part land and part tax upon harvest.
Ms. McGovern, do you have a slide that shows that summary that you just told to us verbally about what we have right now?
Chair Nathanson, I think that the slides that are about to come up will separately break out the parts of where we are now. I have a little bit, a few more slides to go, and I don't think that was it was tough to fit that on one slide, but if I could get those slides and then see if that answers your question.
I was just hoping that there was a visual summary, but that's okay. And one other question, as you were explaining this slide, I think I heard you mention the year 1947. Is that correct?
I believe that's true.
I don't see it on here. Can you point out again what happened there? And I'll write a note on my paper copy.
Oh, Chair Nathanson, thank you very much. It's true that we didn't mark 1947 on this timeline. Oregon over this period from 1929 to 1977 was gradually moving away from the land and standing timber taxes. And so there was this period between 1947 and 1977 where there was both a yield tax on the value and a harvest tax on the volume. And so, you know, just to put that in perspective of where we are today, the harvest taxes that we have now are all on volume and not on value. But there was a period where we had both of those kinds of taxes.
That's very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Next slide, please. Okay. So trying to summarize just a little bit of the changes that we have in the harvest taxes and just a side note about the terminology, harvest taxes and severance taxes and privilege taxes are all taxes that are related to taxation at the time of harvesting. And those can be different methodologies or very similar methodologies based on either value or volume, and the tax revenue can go to different places. So I'm just using the terminology harvest taxes to talk about what was happening here. And so we had two relatively major pieces of legislation in 1993 and 1997 that affected the harvest tax rates in Oregon on value. And so what we had here were decreasing rates for harvest taxes, both in Western and Eastern Oregon. And then you can see that what happened in 1999 is that eventually the House Bill 3573 ultimately phased out entirely these types of severance taxes down from their higher rates you know, starting back in 1993 on this graph. And so we also see one other component here, which is that we abolish this separation between reforestation and regular harvest taxes. And so the reforestation harvest taxes historically were higher in sort of order to incentivize reforestation of the lands. And so more of the taxation was on the harvest versus the property values for these particular pieces of land. And then that was abolished after 1999. Next slide, please. Okay, so just talking about the harvest taxes and the severance taxes and the privileged taxes. The privileged tax, which is what we have now, was more recently developed on, and what we have now is on the volume or for the privilege of cutting timber. And the only what's called, we have a severance tax now, still based on volume, is actually in the small tract forest, small tract program privilege tax. So this tax is also based on volume. So here I'll say that while we have a privilege tax, which is the forest products harvest tax, and then we also have the severance tax for the small tract forest small tract forest land program. We have two separate taxes for the small tract owners. They pay both the forest products harvest tax and a severance tax upon harvest. So I'm going to talk about these, how we can sort of look at these on our next slide. Next slide, please. So in Oregon, the privilege tax is called the Forest Products Harvest Tax. And this would be a tax that's imposed on the harvester of the timber. So for instance, a private landowner harvesting their own trees or an individual or corporation harvesting on federal lands. Those would both be subject to the Forest Products Harvest Tax. This harvest tax is indifferent to the land on which the timber is harvested and regardless of ownership. And it's actually composed of several different rates that are combined together to make the forest products harvest tax. And the rates are also determined differently by budget, by board, and also in statute. And so the Oregon Forest Research Institute, for example, is set by board, and the rate set by for the Forest Practices Act is set by the budget. And the others, which actually we're talking about House Bill 2070 today, the others are set by legislation requiring a bill to originate in the House. And so, you know, I, in looking at the $4.13 per 1,000 board feet that is imposed today, the 90 cents there has been relatively constant. It's been constant for the past 5 years. For instance, the 62 cents has been relatively constant for the past decade. And so this bill that we might see later this afternoon, House Bill 2070, seeks to update those or see if they need to be updated. So this is, you know, a bill that we see every long session. Now, the one thing to note for the forest products harvest tax is that the first 25,000 board feet or the first 25 MBF are exempt, and that is per tax filer. So any individual filer, any company would be exempt for the first 25,000 board feet, regardless how many how much volume they harvest. Next slide, please. So that forest products harvest tax is a tax that any individual who harvests would be required to pay. And then on top of that, we have a small amount of land that is in the small tract forest program. And so there's only a small amount of timber harvested that is subject to the small tract forest land program severance tax. And the rates are set up, you know, we can see them here per 1,000 board feet. They generally tick upward, but they're different for both Eastern and Western Oregon. To be in the small tract forest land program, you must apply and be accepted to this program and to qualify based on total ownership. And we'll get into that later, and just noted that, you know, different from the taxes that we saw on the last slide, this money is distributed locally. And if an individual's property is disqualified for some reason, there are additional tax assessments and restrictions from re-entering the program. So these monies would go to the state school fund, county fund, and community college support. And this would be for that harvester if they are in the small tract forest land program on top of the forest products harvest tax. Next slide, please.
Before you go to the next slide, by county fund, is that the general fund?
Chair Nathanson, I don't believe that's the general fund. I think that, do you mean?
County.
Sorry, the county general fund.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you.
Chair Nathanson, sorry. Okay, next slide. So just looking at the dollar values, for the small tract forest land severance tax collections. This is just a graph that gives the idea of the numbers. They tend to hover around $500,000, but it's pretty lumpy. And these owners that are in this program and pay these severance taxes would also be subject to a reduced property tax. And we'll look at that in just a couple slides when we get to the section on property taxes. We're currently just talking about how this the harvesting taxes work. Next slide, please. Okay. So we had the last slide was a graph of the total collections historically of the small tract forest land. This is a graph of the total collections historically of the forest products harvest tax. And the forest products harvest tax is the largest tax in Oregon imposed at the time of harvest, and to the tune of approximately $15 million annually. This tax does not get distributed to local governments in the way that the small tract forest land collections do. It's imposed on volume, not on value, and it funds those programs that we discussed before, the Forest Research Institute, the Forest Land Protection Fund, OSU Research, the College of Forestry, and the Forest Products Practices Act. And so we have these two different types of harvest tax. They're both imposed at the time of harvest, but they have different purposes and they go to different places. Next slide, please. So this graph, it just made some sense to put all the different taxes that Oregon has imposed at the time of harvest together on a graph and look at the history of that to see where we are. And so you can see that historically, prior to the changes that were phased in beginning around 2000, Oregon had both an Eastern and Western privilege tax. Those have both sunsetted. And now we have the forest products harvest tax. And so you can see that large swath of blue, the dark blue, is the forest products harvest tax that we have today. And this tiny slice of blue underneath, we have the small tract forest land. It's very skinny, but it's a slightly lighter blue. And so, you know, we have a change in the different types of harvest taxes. And so this gives an idea of sort of what's been trending over the past 20 years in Oregon as these changes have been made. Next slide, please. Okay, so now we're just going to get to the last segment, which is the taxes that are imposed on the forest land. And recall, while privilege taxes or harvest taxes may be assessed on timber harvested from either public or private land, the forest land taxes are only imposed on the privately owned land. Next slide, please. Okay, so this graph or diagram is just trying to break up all the different types of forest land in Oregon into sort of a logical mental map. And so I think of it like this. If you have, if you own land generically and it has trees on it, it may have already been decided by the county assessors that this land's best use or its highest and best use is forest land. If this is the case, then it will command an assessed value commensurate with that use. And that specially assessed value is determined by the Department of Revenue and statute, and we'll talk a little bit about that. But if you see some acres that has forests, but it's not part of that category, then by default, you would have to pay taxes on the regularly assessed value like everybody else that owns that property, be it a quarter acre or 100 acres. If this were the case, you might be interested in applying to get that land classed as designated forest land, even if it hadn't been predetermined to be that. So if it gets approved for this classification, then you would get an assessment that matches the highest and best used value based on your soil. So, you know, the designated forest land requires a process, and the highest and best use is assessor designation, and it's already decided that that is the best use for that property. But once the property is in forest land in either of those programs, they receive the same valuation treatment. And this specially assessed value is substantially lower than the regularly assessed value. So as an owner, if you're using that land as forest land, it might make sense to apply. And, you know, you might think of it like this, that the if you were considering buying thousands of acres and you didn't know if it was going to be assessed at the forest land value, then you risk paying a much higher taxes on a higher assessed value. So you may end up shopping for property that is in the highest and best use category for forest land, because that land is already determined as the best use being forest land, highest and best use. However, if you just happen to have a few acres, then you may be able to go through the process of applying for it to be designated forest land. And so some of that designated forest land that people apply to might be closer to cities, or highest and best use forest land might be further out or might be more remote. And so within both of those groups, however, if you can, you can always apply and qualify for small tract forest land program. And this might be advantageous if you have between 10 and 5,000 acres, which is the limit, and if you don't plan to harvest annually. And so what happens with these small tract forest land owners and the program is you voluntarily enter into the program, and if you are accepted and you qualify, then you pay property taxes on 20% of that specially assessed value that we just talked about for forest land. But then when you do harvest, even if you harvest, say, once every 10 years or 15 years or 20 years, you pay the severance tax on that particular harvest versus paying a severance tax annually, paying the property tax on the full 100% value of the specially assessed value. So the treatment between you know, Chair Nathanson, you asked the question earlier, the treatment between small and large properties or small and large forest land owners is a little bit different based on some qualification properties of the land and the owners, because the owner is required to own a minimum of 10 or a maximum of 5,000 acres. Next slide, please. So here, I just thought that it would be handy to have a valuation table. We have, based on the Department of Revenue, those classes that are on the left, FA through FX, and in Eastern Oregon, there's a single class. Those classes are based on the soil and the soil quality. And you can see that the Forest Land Program Special Assessment, we have more productive or highly productive soil. This is not including the value of the trees, but the soil itself is you know, approximately $1,000 an acre. And then we have the specially assessed small tract forest land program, which is not exactly 20%, but approximately 20% of what we would see in the two left-hand columns. And so these are different than maybe what, you know, for instance, the if your house sits on an acre, it would be, those values would be different than the assessed value that sort of quote unquote regular property is. And so these assessed values and specially assessed values would go on the roll, and individuals would pay property taxes in combination with those previous harvest taxes that we talked about. Next slide, please. And then I just thought that I would give a comparison to try and speak to what the small tract forest land program does. And so in Oregon, you know, a recent small tract forest land property property tax was $412,000 for the most recent tax year that we have. And then on top of that, we had the severance tax, which is made up from that 20% of, I apologize. The small tract forest land property tax is on 20% of the value of the forest land property that it would be if it wasn't under the small tract program. And then on top of that, they pay those small tract severance tax rates. And between those two, in the most recent tax year, it came in to just under $1 million at $935,000. And so if those same lands for those small owners of the small forest land properties had been not in the small tract forest land program and they had harvested and they had paid on 100% of the forest land value, their total property tax bill would have been just over $2 million, but they wouldn't have been paying the severance tax to go along with that. So you can see how the small tract forest land program works for smaller owners. Next slide, please. And then this graph is just to look at all the different types of properties in forest land that we have, and then looking at the total property taxes that have been collected from those groups over the past 5 years. And so I will make a caveat and say that these are estimated, and that we're still kind of collecting data all the time and learning more about the forest land program. But what we have here are kind of two different groups. We have land only and we have improved. And so I talked a little bit earlier about how you could break up the all the forest land in Oregon that's privately owned from into highest and best use that's predetermined or designated forest land. And within that, you can have small tract forest land. But within any of those classes, you can also have improved property. So if you're just looking at the trees, that would be the land only. That's large swaths of land growing trees. The improved land and this could have some trees on it, but the improved land would be also land that includes home sites. It would include machinery and equipment and possibly mills or refineries or these kinds of things. So the property taxes on the improved lands are highest, and that, you know, might go along with the fact that there are structures on those improved lands as well. And so these are the total forest land property taxes in Oregon over the past 5 years. And next slide, please. So that concludes the presentation in the sense that we're trying to provide an overview of the taxing, the history of Oregon's forest land property taxes and harvest taxes, and also kind of where we sit today, what kind of taxes that we have in Oregon, including harvest and property taxes.
Thank you. Biddy, any questions for Ms. McGovern?
This is Senator Burdick. I just want to thank you for inviting us to hear this presentation. I think it's always good to have a refresher from time to time because there have been a lot of changes. And thank you for your good work on this, Jamie.
Thank you.
I'm so pleased you were able to join us today. I have two more questions for you, Ms. McGovern. First of all, a couple of slides were labeled taxes on land, and I appreciate why they're labeled that way. It makes it really user-friendly to read and interpret, but probably technically, and since we're the Revenue Committee, I got to ask, it's taxes on real property. Is that right?
Chair Nathanson, I'm thinking that you're talking about the second to last slide where I also included improved property. That's true.
It came up on a slide before that as well, and it occurred to me there may be some types of really large important equipment that might be included in that. I don't know. That's what. Oh, I know. It was just a title slide, where it says taxes imposed on the land.
Chair Nathanson, you're absolutely correct. So we generally have property taxes, and we have forest land taxes. The forest land itself gets a special assessment. And my title slide was short, I guess, in terminology. I think that it's important to know, and your question brings up something really important, that second to last slide, which had the graph that had the improved land or improved property. Anything with an improvement is something with either building or structures on it. And so going through the roll and going through the property tax data is difficult, I guess is might be the right word, but we're working hard to separate the property taxes on just the land and the timber and the forest land only versus the property taxes on the land with structures or just the structures. And we're not 100% there, which is why, you know, I made the caveat that it's their estimates only, but it's a good point that there's some crossover there, some things that we're not able to separate, and that I can try and call that out a little better when in the future.
Thank you. And one last question from me. Are there any instances where the ownership of trees is different, is a different entity than the landowner?
Chair Nathanson, that's a really good question that I don't have an answer for right now. That seems possible, but I couldn't say definitively. I know, for instance, in the small tract forest land program, to be eligible, the requirement is a maximum of 5,000 acres for the filer, even if those properties are not contiguous and they were located all over the state. But the way that the other the lands are treated and the property taxes, I'll have to check on that.
Thank you. Committee members, any other questions before we conclude the informational meeting? Wow, that was a lot of really good history as well as current situation. Thank you very much. I'm closing the informational meeting. I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 2070.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, this is Jamie McGovern from the Legislative Revenue Office, and House Bill 2070 would extend those privileged taxes on merchantable forest products harvested on forest land. Those are the forest products harvest taxes we just saw in the presentation for the forest research, the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund, Forest Practices Act, Forestry Education, and the Forest Research Institute.
Thank you. Before we start calling on the witnesses, committee members, do you have any questions for LRO, Ms. McGovern, about the bill? Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. McGovern, in your staff, I think it's your staff summary, you list some rates there. I'm just wondering, are these the rates that we currently have? Are they different than what we have? I know the description says extends privilege tax, so I'm just trying to understand whether these are current rates being extended or new rates being extended, I guess.
Chair Nathanson, Representative Reschke, that's exactly right. So in the background section, I gave the current total of all those rates together. And then the first 1, 2, 3, 4 rates, so everything except for the Forest Research Institute, you would see in House Bill 2070 as a placeholder. They're currently blank. But they're currently set at those rates. And so some of these rates are, this is, I guess, sometimes called a placeholder bill because they're budget decided. So they are not, those rates that you see in the background are not the proposed rates, just the rates that we have currently in statute.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any other questions before we move to the witnesses? I don't see any right now. Of course, there will be time after the witnesses for us to ask additional questions or clarifications from LRO, for example. We have 5 people signed up to testify. Manny, is there anyone who signed up in those last minutes before, since I printed the list?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. 5 people to testify. As always, it's really appreciated if you can keep your testimony to around 3 minutes or so. There may be committee questions for you or some sort of discussion. I will try to be gentle about the 3 minutes, not too stringent about it, but it is helpful. The order will be, I'll say them all in advance so you can be planning your participation. Kyle Abraham, Jody Weiser, Roger Beyer, Catherine Thomason, Chris Edwards. So in that order, Kyle Abraham, please.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, just fine.
Great. And I believe we have a very brief presentation, if that could be brought up. Thank you, Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kyle Abraham, and I serve as the Private Forest Division Chief for the Oregon Department of Forestry. Appreciate the opportunity to provide testimony on House Bill 2070 and how the Forest Products Harvest Tax funds the department's work. House Bill 2070 amends ORS 321.015 to establish the Forest Products Harvest Tax rates for calendar years 2022 and 2023. And as mentioned before, these taxes support OSU Forest Research Laboratory, OSU Professional Forestry Education, and the Oregon Department of Forestry's administration of the Oregon Forest Practices Act. Forest Practices Act is vital in assuring the public that private lands are managed with resource protections and that a stable regulatory environment exists for forest businesses. Enacted in 1971 and modified many times since, it regulates timber harvest, road construction and maintenance, treatment of slash chemical use, and other practices on private lands. Success of our program depends on the shared responsibility and partnerships among forest landowners, operators, other state agencies, and the Department of Forestry. The program gains compliance with the Forest Practices Act by maintaining an effective balance of science-based rules, incentives, technical assistance, and uniform enforcement. For the department, the bill maintains—
Mr. Abraham?
Yes, ma'am.
Did you want to advance the slide yet?
I was almost there.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
Sorry.
No worries. For the department, the bill, like I said, maintains that concept of shared responsibility between the general public and forest landowners, resource protection, and public benefits by the Forest Practices Act by jointly funding administration with general funds and harvest tax revenue. One of the things that this bill does is it provides 60% general fund and 40% harvest tax for the administration of our program within ODF. Next slide, please. This is similar to a chart that you've seen just recently, but the tax rates established by this bill are also set on a per thousand board feet basis. To help visualize what a thousand board feet looks like on a loaded log truck, about somewhere on average about 4,000 board feet is what we figure that that looks like. And the rate is calculated eventually based on the current biennium ending balance, projected budget requirements for the next biennium, and forecasted harvest levels for the next 2 years. Oregon harvest levels declined during the 90s due to reduction in harvest from federal lands, resulting in rate increases so tax revenues would continue to meet our budget needs despite those reduced harvest volumes. And since 1999, harvest levels have generally stabilized between 3.5 and 4 billion board feet, and tax rates have stabilized as well. As also noted, due to the COVID-19 pandemic and also some recessionary pressures facing Oregon, forecasting is a little bit more difficult than usual for us. But based on broad feedback in 2020 harvest tax turnovers, we expect the harvest levels will remain in the 3.5 billion board feet range. Next slide. The Oregon Department of Revenue collects the harvest tax and transfers the receipts to the Department of Forestry on a quarterly basis. At this time, we still have 1 of 8 revenue transfers remaining in the current biennium, and we expect that transfer will occur in early May of this year. Because the new rates in House Bill 2070 for the next 2-year period are based in part on the ending balance in this biennium, we would suggest rates not be inserted into the bill yet. In addition to the current biennium's actual revenues, calculation of the harvest tax rate also involves the department's budget for the next biennium. Therefore, the rate calculations must remain fluid until the agency's budget bill is at or near completion. And this leak necessitates a concurrent consideration of House Bill 2070 and the agency's budget bill Senate Bill 5518 in the Joint Ways and Means Committee during the final legislative budget process. Next slide, please. In summary, the Department of Forestry supports House Bill 2070, welcomes the opportunity to work with the Legislative Assembly on harvest tax rates as revenue and budget processes move forward, and I'd be happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you for being with us and explaining that. Any questions for this witness? And can you stay with us just in case someone has a question in the next few minutes and I haven't noticed their hand go up?
Yes, thank you, Chair Nathanson. I can do that.
Thank you. Next is Jody Weiser. I can hear something. Ms. Weiser, are you there?
I am finally here.
Thank you.
Chair Nathanson and members of the committee, my name is Jody Weiser, and I'm pleased to be here today as a volunteer for Task Artist Oregon, a network of volunteers who support a rational and equitable tax code. So as you've learned, every 2 years, legislators consider and vote on the tax rates for the harvest tax. It's a 3/5 vote that's required. Why you attend to these rates every biennium when you do not reset our personal or our corporate income tax rates every biennium is a bit of a mystery. We believe that you should set the rates and have DOR index them for inflation each year, and then review them every 6 years as we do tax credits and the provider tax. Otherwise, you're really spending time on something that doesn't deserve this kind of attention. This chart shows the rates since 2010 and our proposal. And you can see that we just used an online inflation adjustment to get the rates updated from 2019 when they were last set. That's not the mechanism that's used by the state to adjust for inflation. And so I'm sure if the Department of Revenue did the adjustment, the numbers might be somewhat different, but they would be very close to this. As you heard from Kyle, some of things like the budget for the department, the forestry department, is based on ending balances and projected harvests, and there's a limit that this tax can only collect 40% of the money for the department. That limit doesn't make any particular sense at all, and we think it's nonsense. It should just be left out of our law. Obviously, the costs for delivering services have gone up, as has the value of timber with some downturns over the same period. And this chart, the second chart, was taken from LRO's 2021 presentation. I believe that Jamie included the same information in today's presentation as well. It seems logical that the revenue from this tax should increase with inflation. Thus, our suggestion: set the rates for the coming biennium as adjusted by the usual CPI used by the state of Oregon, adjust them since 2019 when the rates were last set, and then set it for the next 6 years to go up by inflation with a sunset date of January 1st, 2028. So you would need to remove the provisions requiring the legislature to reset these taxes every 2 years. You would need to add a statement that says that the DOR is to increase the rates of inflation since 2019 and annually going forward. You would remove the cap on the collection and spending of the Forest Land Protection Fund. And you would remove the cap that says the harvest tax will provide no more than 40% of the funding for the Forest Practices Act. When you look at how little the rates have changed over the last 10 years, it's clear that you shouldn't be putting a whole lot of effort into this particular issue. There's many other issues about forestry that do need our attention, and this seems to be using up a lot of the energy of the legislature each year because of the three-fifths majority requirement. So since the tax only collects about $15 million a year, it would be valuable to allow legislators to focus on more important work. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Pham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Weiser, you referred to a chart and a graph. You seemed in your testimony to be referring to something that we should be looking at. Could that be shared with us, or did you want us?
My testimony is on file.
Okay. Well, I was just hoping. I'm sorry, I should have just interrupted while you were testifying to ask if it could be shared, because it seemed like it went with your testimony. But I will look up under the testimony.
I don't know. Staff can put it up or not, but basically it's actually two things that Jamie shared today. One shows, like in 2010, the rate for the OSU research was 92 cents, and in 2020 it was 90 cents per 1,000 board feet. That's not a significant change. The fire protection fund has been the same rate. For all that.
Ms. Weiser, we'll make sure that the charts are available. We don't need to discuss them individually, but we should make sure that everyone can see them.
Right. It's odd to be in this situation where, you know, it's not, your testimony isn't being projected for everybody to read while you're speaking.
And I don't have it available. I can't do that for you. I'm sorry. Next is Roger Beyer.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson and members of the committee. My name is Roger Beyer. I'm here representing the Oregon Small Woodlands Association. We are actually neutral on House Bill 2070 at this point in time, as typically we wait to see what the rates are before we take a position on the bill. We typically do end up supporting the bill, as we recognize these programs are important to our members, and the funding provided by this legislation is something we recognize the state needs. And we will probably support it, but we always wait to see what the rates actually are before we take an official position on the bill. We would ask that you move the bill forward into the Ways and Means Committee so that it can be married up with the budget and passed after those rates can be set. And as you've already heard, they use multiple factors in determining the rates, such as the ending balance in the funds that are currently there and the projected rate of harvest for the year. I saw that the Department of Forestry is projecting a 3.5 billion board feet harvest level, which is slightly lower than it has been some of the most previous years. And I wonder if that number shouldn't be changed or will be changed between now and when the rates are set due to the catastrophic wildfires back in September and the amount of salvage logging that's been done, because this is a volume based. It doesn't matter if the timber is valuable or not. If it's cut and sold, it is counted against that whatever the projection is. So even though those salvage logs may not have the value that they would have had they not burned, they still be counted as volume. So I think the amount may be slightly higher than that, but I'm not the expert they are. So with that, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions and would hope you would schedule a work session on the bill and move it to Ways and Means. Thank you.
Thank you for the testimony. Any questions for Mr. Beyer? Next is Catherine Thomason.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson, and the members of the committee for allowing this testimony today. I am speaking, my name is Catherine Thomason, and I am speaking on behalf of the League of Women Voters of Oregon. And I pulled up the wrong document. this bill, HB 2070, is a must-pass bill to allow the forest products harvest tax to be levied. And I'm speaking in favor of that, but to also offer recommendations for significant amendments. The League has criteria for evaluating taxes, recognizing that individuals are responsible for funding government services, that revenue be provided by broad sharing of the tax burden, and that it be equitable, adequate, stable, easy to administer, and as simple as possible. Yet the harvest tax has to be reinstated every biennium. This is an exception to our tax code and a waste of legislators' time. The bills proposed by Representatives Marsh and Nathanson would have addressed this, but they were not referred forward for a vote. To resolve this, the League advises this bill be amended to set a baseline rate, then index it to inflation annually with a six-year review, similar to other taxes in this type of class. Removing the caps for Oregon's Department of Forestry percentage of revenue when their revenue gets filled in by the general fund, no matter what, and also for limitations on the fire fund when the fire fund has been exceeded every single year given our climate change, seems also to make this an improved method of taxation. The current rate of $4.13 per thousand board feet on timber that's now worth between $650 and $750 per thousand board feet in Western timber prices over the past several years is a very low tax rate to pay, which is approximately 0.6%. This kind of preferential tax treatment for the industrial timber industry over the years needs to be reexamined, as they are not paying their fair share of services in the counties they work in with very low property taxes and low fire fees. Should the severance tax bill not move forward this session, and to help legislators prepare for a more robust harvest type tax, we encourage you to amend this bill as well to require the Department of Revenue develop forms to collect data on timber value and any other information they would need to move Oregon to a value-based timber tax rather than volume. Thank you for accepting my testimony.
And thank you. Any questions for Ms. Thomason? And before we get to the next speaker, this is a reminder to anyone, if you had written information for us that has not yet been submitted for the record, you have 24 hours from the time when the meeting began today to send in that testimony, either something that you had already written or something new that it occurs to you you want to submit to us. So please do submit to us written testimony. The next speaker is Chris Edwards.
Good afternoon, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Reschke, and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Chris Edwards, and I am here on behalf of the Oregon Forest and Industries Council, a trade association representing forest products manufacturers and the majority of large private forest landowners in the state. OFIC is in favor of sending House Bill 2070 to the Committee on Ways and Means without recommendation as to its passage, so that the harvest tax rates can then be established at the levels necessary for the budget items that it funds. House Bill 2070 is a vitally important piece of legislation that comes up for consideration each biennium. It sets the harvest tax rate for funding three critical programs. And although the mechanism of the bill is a tax mechanism, it functions much like an agency fee bill. The tax mechanism in the bill, the Forest Products Harvest Tax, is a volumetric tax on timber harvested from the state's public and private forest lands. And the revenue from the rate changes proposed in this bill are used to fund these three programs. First, the Forest Research Laboratory and forest-related research at Oregon State University. Second, professional forestry education at Oregon State University. And finally, to help fund the administration of the Oregon Forest Practices Act at the Department of Forestry. These programs are key not only to the health and resiliency of the state's forest sector, but also to the protection and well-being of the state's natural resources. you have heard from the department about the importance of maintaining fluidity in the harvest tax rates until the department's budget bill is finalized. This is especially important in light of the market disruptions that have impacted the state this past year. We thank this committee for its continued commitment to maintaining the public-private partnership that undergirds the administration of the Oregon Forest Practices Act and funding for the state's land grant institution. We ask you that you continue this practice by referring House Bill 2070 to the Committee on Ways and Means without recommendation, so it can there be synced up with the harvest tax rate that the department's in the department's budget bill. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you for the testimony. Any questions for Mr. Edwards? Okay, thanks for being with us. Representative Pham.
Yes, I have a question for, I think, anybody who could answer it. How long has this tradition of charging the harvest tax lasted? I'm sure it was covered in the slides, but there's just been so much information shared. How long have we been starting this every 2 years harvest tax arrangement? Anyone can answer, I'm just curious.
I'll ask first for LRO to jump in.
And of course, it was LRO.
Representative Pham, Chair Nathanson, I am not certain, but I'm looking at my spreadsheets right now, and I think at least back till 1990 that I see that, but Chris may also know more about that.
Mr. Edwards?
A lot of the funding inside of the forest products harvest tax goes back many, many years, and Jamie's correct, it goes a long way back. Different pieces of it have been adjusted per other statutes. So for instance, the part that goes to the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund, so that was part of much more holistic negotiations around the Wildfire Protection Act that we passed in 2013. Under the leadership of Governor Kitzhaber at the time. And believe me, funding is extraordinarily complex, and that bill alone took several sessions to work out and get across the finish line. So that's like one example of one little piece of the forest products harvest tax that I've heard criticized that it hasn't increased. And well, that piece was negotiated in context of a bunch of other funding streams and different funds that have different management mechanisms, and there's a lot of hydraulics between them. So that's a little bit of historic perspective anyway.
Thanks for asking, Rep. Pham, and thanks for the response, Mr. Edwards. Representative Marsh.
Here we go. Thank you, Chair Nathanson. Mr. Edwards, nice to have you here, even in virtual form. I am struck, as I look back on the presentation that we had earlier from Jamie McGovern about the consistency of our private forest harvest. Really, if you go back decades, you see a very consistent board feet being produced by our private producers. And I just wondered, to what you attribute that steady production?
Well, I'm not going to speculate as to why production is relatively steady, but if I might speculate as to why you're asking, you might be asking about wondering about why it is not permanent. And I think there's been some testimony about making this permanent. And it's just, I mean, the harvest does vary. The ending fund balance varies. And that's everything from policy decisions to position vacancies. There have been, at different legislative sessions, there have been budget packages that have put more money into Forest Practices Administration. So there are those variables. Plus, there is market variability that necessitates, establishing this much like an agency fee bill every biennium.
Follow up, Chair Nathanson.
Sure.
So I'm just thinking about, I mean, you have experience being in this building and managing the income tax revenues that create the general fund and then trying to figure out budgets when the income tax goes up and down and up and down. And it would seem like it would be unfair to balance the budget on the back of the taxpayers. So wouldn't it be a more fair system to simply have a predictable and stable rate and then force budget makers and agency people to deal with the fluctuations?
Well, we have a very narrow, I mean, the scope of programs that are funded by the forest products harvest tax is actually, I mean, substantially narrower than something as broad as, you know, the income taxes of the entire state of Oregon and all those budgets that that are funded by those really broad tax streams. So this is like, this is super narrow, and it just seems appropriate to manage it how we've been managing it.
No more questions.
Representative Levy.
Thank you, Chair. Well, Representative Marsh took my question, so I will just say nice to see you again, Chris, and let it go at that.
Nice to see you as well, Representative.
So I'll ask a question now for LRO, either Ms. McGovern or maybe even Mr. Alanac, because it's a little bit broader in scope. As Mr. Edwards put, this is a really about a very narrow area. Well, we had a bill recently, another area that one of the proponents or advocates for that bill was explaining, well, we're trying to carve out this particular program area and protect its budget, and it was through a new tax, a new income tax. So I'm just wondering is how it seems this is very unusual to have a program that's determined by I recognize it's approved by the legislature, but maybe the program is determined by a smaller group of people in an agency, for example, and then a tax rate is proposed, and the legislature is charged with adjusting that tax rate every 2 years, and we all recognize that a supermajority vote is not a small thing. How unusual is it? Because to me, it seems very unusual that we're determining what normally is a budget decision. We're making a budget decision in a revenue committee and then coming up with a rate to make the budget decision work. Are there other examples of this in our work? I don't recall any.
Madam Chair, I think this is fairly unique. I struggle to come up with another one that's like this. There might be some that have slightly different twist. Medical provider taxes come into play, but those are set for a while. This is the only one that happens every biennium, and it does seem to be unique. And if general memory serves, every time it passes pretty easily, despite the three-fifths. Usually a three-fifths vote causes a lot of consternation in the building, and this still goes. But I seem to recall generally a couple of members every session saying that this is strange, why do we do this, and we need to look at it and make sure we're doing it on purpose, as opposed to, well, this is the way we've been doing it for a while, so we'll just keep doing it.
Well, I invite committee reaction if you would like to, but since I have had experience in the joint ways and means process, and now I'm in the revenue process, this seems a lot to me like this is a very special carve out to make sure that one budget area is treated in a way to protect some programs, but all the other program areas in the state that are funded by our tax system more generally, or our system of taxes plus other revenues, other types of revenues, including federal funds. It just seems out of the ordinary, and I'm not entirely convinced about this one. Representative Pham.
Thanks, Chair Nathanson. Since you invited some comments, then I feel like we can just start to reflect on the things that we've heard. I would agree that it does seem like we're treating this one particular industry and this one particular program area differently. And I think it's important that we're consistent and that it's that we treat the areas consistently and are able to look holistically at all our programs when we're thinking about our budgetary decisions. Thanks for raising that.
I'm thinking about people who rely on whether it's Oregon State University and Extension agents or Department of Agriculture or some of the programs where we do crop research and research on invasive species, for example, and how are those funded and is there a special tax area with special tax treatment to protect that part of the agricultural economy of Oregon? Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is probably a question for LRO, but I was wondering if LRO could go back a few biennia and pull up this tax, the tax numbers, and just let me know what the numbers are so I can go back and look at my vote on previous year's harvest tax. That'd be enlightening to see, because I don't remember the numbers on them. And you don't have to do it right now, but send me an email.
The bill numbers?
The bill numbers,
yes.
Correct.
Yeah, we could do
Thank
that.
Thank you.
I'm Representative Reschke and Chair Nathanson. I'd just also like to add that we do have the history of the dollar amounts, not the bill numbers, but the charges for the forest products harvest tax in our basic facts each year. So sometimes if you just want to grab the history of the amounts, we keep that. We run track of that.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just kind of reflecting on your comments from a moment ago, and I think I would concur that this is a little bit quirky in how it operates. However, as I start thinking about ways and means, there's multiple areas of funding that are
core. Rep Smith, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I've sensed that you're telling us something that's going to be really important and useful. And for me, the audio is breaking up quite a bit. Could you experiment with turning your camera off and maybe maybe the audio will come through better?
Yeah, I apologize. Is this any better?
Oh, that's better. Thank you very much.
Is this any better?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I guess what I was going to share, Madam Co-Chair, as I was reflecting on your earlier comments, is there's no doubt that this method of using the dollars is quirky, but I think within Ways and Means, if you kind of step back and think about it, there's multiple agencies that have quirky uses for the money that they self-assess or assess themselves. The one that comes to mind with me is the Construction Contractors Board, in which you have an agency that uses those dollars not only to regulate themselves, but also to provide education and outreach to support their own industry. And so I think it'd be really prudent as the chair of revenue to maybe go visit with some of the legislative fiscal staff and just see if there are other examples, because I'd hate for us to turn a process over without doing a little more research on it. So, but I do appreciate your comments. I do agree with you, this is quirky.
Thank you very much. And I'm sorry we couldn't see you at the same time, but I'm really glad to get your words. That was important. Thank you. Rep Valderrama.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks for the opportunity just to weigh in here a little bit and reflect. First, I just want to say thank you so much to Jamie McGovern. I thought that was an incredible presentation, very informative, so appreciate the information and the opportunity to hear with other colleagues as well. You know, I tend to agree that additional examples of potential other similar scenarios is helpful. I do think from the presentation and the conversation here that it does seem like there's a special carve out here, particularly. And I do think just in terms of posing the question of why is there different treatment here for one particular program, is that the best for all involved, and could there be more consistency, especially in budgeting, that could be as a result of changing this particular process. I do think that that seems to make more sense to me. It seems like there's a lot of information still to learn here. So I appreciate the opportunity to provide input on that. I'm looking forward to learning more.
Thank you. Any other committee member comments or questions regarding this public hearing before I close the hearing on House Bill 2070. Okay, I'm not seeing any right now. Mr. Alanak, is there anything that you want to add before I close this public hearing?
I guess I would just add, as members kind of digest the information they received today, tomorrow's another timber tax bill. So if you have questions, don't hesitate to reach out to us.
Thanks. I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 2070. Committee members, anything else in the way of comments before we end this meeting? You've heard from Mr. Alanak what our meeting tomorrow will be like. Okay. We're done for the day. Thank you. We're adjourned.